What's that, Hoddy?
Yeah, that was a poor bugger.
Yeah. That. Get well soon, Kempe. He's chopped his knee up because he's a clever dick.
I can't work out how you do it, though. The knee.
He reckons he's like felling a tree and then he's gone to run away from it, but it's kicked back, and that's why.
Ah, yeah.
You know, if you can.
No, what he's done is not worn chaps.
A chap wouldn't have stopped that.
Yeah, it would have.
Nah.
Yeah, chap. Well, look, you look how deep it is. A chap would have at least made it half as deep.
Yeah, true.
Or if not less, you know?
Mm. But anyway, get well soon, Kempe. I don't like looking at the photo of it.
Pretty rough.
Can't do that stuff.
Surgeons can do magical stuff these days.
If he could get a surgeon. What's he up to? He did on Sunday. Today's Tuesday. And he still hasn't got a surgery.
Yeah, I thought he was going in yesterday.
No, they did. They wheeled him all the way across the hospital to go to the surgery. And then they said, oh, nah, it's been cancelled.
You know why? He probably spent too much time talking to the doctor.
You've used up your time slot.
Yeah.
What's these photos? Who sent these photos? I'm just looking at them.
Oh, my art.
What?
Your wing art?
Yeah,
what?
That was we were talking about airstrips and stuff, and I was trying to think about some of the fun airstrips that I'd been on, and those. So I looked back in the photos, and that was the photos that came up. That was I think there's a couple of contributing factors. One was that was the week before I went away, had that big trip to the States. So maybe I was thinking about that a little bit. And then...
get home-itis.
Yeah, that, and also had cancer. So that I didn't know about.
Didn't know about that one.
Didn't know that, yeah, so...
Could have been playing a part.
Something, eh? But... So, yeah, he's a bit fatigued, but, you know, that's what those photos are. That first one was you guys would have both worked at Nixhead Station in Gisborne.
Yeah.
Rings a bell, but...
It's just, if you took off from Gisborne, off of 1-4, and looked straight out, and then flew straight across the bay, basically, slightly to the right.
To the right, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
To young Nixhead.
Yeah. Nixhead, yeah. That was... I must have... The only thing I think of is I must have gone away and the run wasn't quite finishing off what was in the hopper, and I was filling in a little corner, and I think that I've gone, when I've come back, I haven't filled in the little corner. I've taken a little bit back with me, got the load.
Wasn't it?
Hey?
Wasn't there something too about the strip being shorter because it had been turned into maize or something?
Yeah, but I was still flying to that. And. Yeah. And because
you're loading to that.
You're loaded to that. And then I took off, wasn't going well. And I pushed the button because in the XL, we're just on a joystick. So you take it out of its detent to arm it, which I did. And then you push a button and that should start sewing at your sew rate. But I think what's happened I was thinking that it was sewing because it wasn't going so well. And it mustn't have been coming out because if you walk the airstrip, there's nothing coming out. And then fucking dumb Sam's just left it too late. And by the time I dumped, it was no good. Yeah.
So, when you dumped, did that get you out of the pickle, or is this fence that in the photo I see, is that
that's still it did the job because I got over it, but that's the undercarriage collected the fence.
Your undercarriage went through the fence,
yeah undercarriage did, but the rest of the plane was sweet.
The prop didn't hit
it was sort of like that
be nose high,
wouldn't yeah it? It was nose high, and then I was having a conversation with Trusty like a week before that. we were pissed a bit, so I don't know how I remember it, but he's sort of going on and he's just like, no matter what happens, you don't want to drag your elevator through the fence. So that was all that was on my mind. So I was just bloody heaving it forward in full dump, and it just sort of helicoptered over it, but it still got the fence. Yeah. But luckily the fence must have been pretty average, because, you know, even going that slow, it still took off.
And you didn't lose the undercarriage, did you?
No, didn't. But it must have been like 6 months later that Trusty was flying that plane, and he was turning around in the loading area, and the leg just went...
Doesn't say much, like, I don't know what that says about our maintenance.
Well, I don't, yeah.
Surely they would have changed those bolts out.
You would think so, eh? But I don't know. But yeah, so... But there, and then that was at the start of the week, and then next day, finished that job, had a couple of windy days and a couple of growlings, and then it was on the Thursday or the Friday I was going to leave to go on that trip to the States, and then it was my last load of the day, and the duck just went. Yeah, you see that photo of that duck, and it's...
That's a wingtip, is it?
Oh, it's the outer panel, and it's just...
Yeah.
You can see the whole outer panel, it's just rippled the whole thing. But...
Man.
What airstrip was that from?
Oh, where it's, you know, out Holdsworth place, yeah, at Tech Record, with that bloody pond right at the end of the airstrip.
I was going to mention that one, like, airstrips with ponds, yeah, with duck, like duck shooting momoys, yeah, not ideal,
yeah,
especially when they feed, put maize in the,
yeah,
pond to, sure, get the ducks to come.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, duck shooting in autumn and top dressing tend to be, you know, like top dressing's a busy time of year in autumn, yeah, isn't it? And so, yeah.
You should just stop working, eh? Because all duck shooting, all the ducks are in the air. So it's, yeah, just a recipe for fucking...
Well, when you're working off an airstrip with a dam at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, a duck shooting, yeah, problem.
Yeah. No, so that's what those photos were. But,
All right. I've hit ducks before and it'll hit just a little bit, looking at that photo you sent in, that's hit it almost right on the leading edge, right on the front.
Square, yeah.
Maybe slightly higher, yeah, so square. And I've hit one, or one's hit me, just a little bit higher and a little bit outboard, and it did barely any damage.
Nothing, just skimmed off.
Yeah, skims off.
Was it Glenn? He got an eagle, right? Straight in, like punched straight into the wing. It's just his like little legs sticking out the wing.
Really?
Something like, yeah.
We had a vulture in Tanzania come into the wing. I think we had a whole flock of them. That was with other Jimbo. We were surveying.
Jim Phillips.
Yeah, yeah. We were surveying in the morning. You know, you do a test run or whatever it's called.
Yep. QA line or
something base. I can't remember.
Yeah.
You fly the same line in the morning and afternoon to calibrate something. We were doing that in the morning, and a whole flock of these big birds, I don't know what they were, swan flamingo looking things, and they all came out of the trees in front of us, and I remember staring at them like, whoa, these are crazy. And I look over at Jim and he's like hunched over and he's ducking, and they're like, oh shit, I should have done that too. And it was only like later on that same day, the exact same thing happened, and it was a flock of vultures that flew up, and we hit at least two of them, but probably more. One hit the wingtip, the left wingtip, I think, and went into the what do you call that? The cap, the fairing. The fiberglass bit, and also hit right on the wingtip.
On the wingtip.
Oh, it's just for fairing, isn't it?
Yeah, the fairing, but also hit the metal as well. Smashed right into it and left his wing behind, but the rest of him fell off. And then another one smashed into the tip of the rudder. And we were flying back and same thing there. I remembered to duck this time when it happened, so I was awake at least, so that's another bonus. We went back and landed, and I think we were on the ground for a couple of days waiting for some duct tape to arrive so we could patch it up until some fella flew over from, I don't know where it was, Hamilton, I think, whoever, might have been Puddles that came over. Puddle? Yeah.
Came was that over. NXLA?
And, yeah, it was. Yeah. With a repair kit, and we flew up to Entebbe in Uganda and met him there and did some patchwork on it, which I was really unhelpful with the whole thing because 2 days before that, I got malaria.
Oh, God.
And I was just a wreck.
Were you the guy who went home and you were, oh, it might have been Rex's son. It was someone who got malaria on their way home, and they were like, you know, and it's a three-day trip from West Africa to New Zealand. And about
I think it was Bevan. Yeah, it wasn't me.
It wasn't you, eh? Yeah. And halfway home, that really hit him while he was on a 14-hour flight.
Now, I think even Jim might have got another bout of it like months after he got home, or someone did.
Yeah.
Like a relapse or whatever it's called.
Now, so you're parked up while the repair was getting done?
Yeah, I got asked to do something. I think Puddle said cut this. Might have been a bit the plexiglass fairing over the light. Just to cut that in the right shape, and he said, "Oh, just go easy on it, because if you go too hard, it'll just crack the whole thing, and we've only got one, and we're in the middle of nowhere, can't get another, blah blah blah." And it took me, I think, 2.5 hours, and I probably cut an inch. And by then, it was like, "Oh man, you need to go." And I was sitting there just covered in sweat, forcing myself to do some work. Yeah, it wasn't fun.
Talking about the hitting the rudder, have you guys got a stone or something hit either the Horry step or the elevator and stopped you having authority or control with the elevator?
I've had a bird hit it.
Did it stop your control?
Did it jam it?
Did jam?
No, we think it stalled it because I was flying along, so I hit a bird. Plumber, same thing, you know, you saw a duck and it goes over, and I thought it hit the vertical, but hit the Horry, and the plane, when I stopped sewing, you know how normally when you're sewing, you get a bit of a shaking?
Yeah.
A wee bit? I stopped sewing, and it just carried on shaking, so I did a bit of a gentle turn, and when I rolled level, the stick just pulled hard forward, and it kept doing that, so I pulled it back and flying, and then I'd pull hard forward again, and I'd pull back, and the bird had hit the Horry stab in a way that pushed it up.
Yeah.
And what we think was the vortices coming off that was stalling or doing something to the airflow going over the elevator.
Jesus.
And calling the stick to keep pulling forward, because the whole way home it's just keep pulling hard forward and I keep pulling it hard back. And yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just sent photos on our messenger group.
Did you find anything helped reduce the pulling forward?
No, but I was at a speed, and I thought, well, I didn't want to slow down or speed up in case it changed it, because I knew it was holding.
Yes.
So I just used the power lever to lose height and just maintain the same speed. I think it was like 110 knots, and just carried all the way down until I was just above the runway and cut the power and landed.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah, but all we can really work out was because it was such a bent up shape, it was just the airflow was so disrupted.
Yeah.
Yeah, causing the elevator to pull forward.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, that would have been a good art racing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But have you had a stone jam at Burgess?
Yeah, I did on an airstrip in the King Country. It was a really nice steep airstrip, can't remember the name of it, but sort of between Taumarunui Tikawiti and real steep buggy, you can see it from the main road. And it's the, I think the top half had metal recently put on it, or it might have just been the loading area. And I remember I took off and in the process must have flicked a stone up and it jammed in the, oh, I don't know how to explain it. You know, the little, there's a little gap strip in there.
Yeah.
It got jammed in there, but the XL's got the gap strip, the Cresco doesn't. That's between the Horry Stab and the elevator. And it jammed in there, and I took off, and it's a steep one, and there's sort of hills in front of you, so you got to turn away, and where I was sewing across the road, you had to sort of turn sharp-ish and pull up a bit. And when I turned to the left and just pulled up a bit, it just felt funny, felt kind of stiff.
Yeah.
So you didn't know it was jammed until that point?
That's right, yeah. I think I actually, so I think I remember it happening as I landed, which is the odd thing. Like I always check the controls before takeoff. And I seem to remember feeling something, or I don't know, something in my head was like, oh, that's unusual, but clever dick me never investigated. And then once I took off, it must have wiggled into a spot or something that it just hit that spot where it didn't really want to move. And I took off and I was heading towards the ridge. It wasn't an unsafe situation, but I just started sewing my load. As soon as I crossed over the road, just started tipping it out anyway, so the neighbors got a good free coating. And as soon as my load was empty, just sort of, you know, gently turned back around, came in and landed, and it was a tricky one to come back and land on, just because of the hills on the other side of the road, which were quite close to the strip, so you had to do sort of almost a turn the whole way onto short finals to touchdown, and then because it was steep, you had to
big elevator movement.
Yeah. So to do that in an easy movement, you sort of had to plan a little bit further out. I didn't want to yank too hard on it in case I broke something.
Mm.
So I kind of started the flare like as I was turning on to finals, if that makes sense. Just kept that pressure the whole way going a little bit faster. And then because it was a long and steep strip, you could touch down like halfway up and you'd still stop without using beater. So aim for the bottom and landed and got to the top, jumped out, had a look, and it was just a tiny little stone like the size of an almond that was there. Just a wee little fella, and it just jammed in the right spot, and it would have only taken me a couple of good bangs with the stick to really free it, but...
It didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah, when you don't know.
You don't want to push too hard in case you break something, don't you? You're not sure. Yeah, I had a similar sort of thing, but it was... the right hand seatbelt buckle. So also remember that quite a steep airstrip, Mount Florida. Mm. And it's one of those ones, once you take the feet off and power up, you're committed. You know, it's steep enough that you're not stopping at the end. Yep. So like you power up, I just went to put a bit of back pressure on the stick and it's like, fuck, it's jammed. You know, so it's like just instant dump. Got airborne and like it was flying and like it wasn't pulling up and wasn't pulling down. It was sort of jammed in that neutral position, which is quite good, but you don't know what it is. And I'm like, well, fuck, you know, what do you do? And so looking out and trying to see if I can, because I couldn't move that aileron either, which was a bit weird. So you don't normally jam the aileron and the elevator So, and then I looked down and where's the seatbelt buckle from right hand one had actually wedged itself into that sock area.
Yeah.
And just, if I push forward and away, I would have been able to do that. But, you know, when you're taking off, you're pulling forward, pulling back, aren't you?
Mm.
And so I couldn't go to the right. Yeah, so freed it. But, yeah, it was it's sort of interesting looking back at what, you know, sort of led to that. So, like, it was getting windy. It was a short day and you knew it was going to get windy. So we got to the airstrip and we wanted to get, it was 50 ton of a bin, you just wanted to get it done sort of thing. So not so much rushing, but you know, just not doing all the checks I normally do. And one reason, one check I always do was always make sure the right hand seatbelt buckles were always done up and tight. It was sort of a habit I'd gone into with the Crescos and same with the XLs. But I'd had the same motor drive for about 2 years, and I got so comfortable with him and used to him always doing it, I'd stop checking it, sort of thing. Just relying on him doing it. And it was that one day where he hadn't done it, I didn't check it, and it must have dropped down onto the ground and just made itself far enough forward where it then sat into the sock.
Jesus.
So, yeah.
Just in the right spot.
Because it's a little bit different, but George had something similar, but he put the control lock in, didn't he?
That's right.
That was it.
Why did he put the control lock
in? It was just windy. After that, of course, everyone told him, you just chuck the seatbelt around it.
Yeah, wrap the seatbelt.
But obviously no one had told George that, so it was the old Cresco one where you flick it out from underneath the dash and put that in, you know, just like you're talking, wanting to quickly get out of there. It's getting windier and windier. Pretty exposed airstrip, Waimaha. Just jumped in and powered up, went to go pull back. And no, hombre. It was bloody.
But how did he get out of that one? Because that's elevate. It's no hard down.
Yeah, it is no hard. That's right. No, I think he just managed to reach down and pull that pin out in time. He must have just hulked it out because that's a fiddly bloody thing.
Isn't it? Yeah, you got to push and pull.
Yeah.
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 So he must have just bloody.
If we're talking about George and bird strikes, didn't he have a bird go through the windshield?
The side one.
And he just... Yeah, didn't he just get like a real estate sign and duct tape that on? Carried on working for the day, or maybe just fly home. I'm not sure.
But that was on takeoff, and he got it in the side window.
How does that work?
Absolutely no idea. But side window, and
hard crosswind.
And it didn't die. It didn't die, so it was flying around in the cockpit with him.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. What? But you had another skier on that Mount Florida, didn't you, Pete? But it was landing.
Same day, David. Same day.
Oh, you joke. Was that
same
power?
Day?
Yeah, I went home after that second one. So, what was that? Yeah, so it was, I knew it was going to get windy. Wind came, and I knew it was coming in, and so that's sweet. And I was too hot, you know, for that airstrip. But had plenty of room to go around. Gave it all of that. And, of course, there's only 27 PSI came up, which for the XL, 64 PSI is the maximum. You know, you're sort of sewing around 40 PSI, 42 PSI. And so 27's not much. You know, it's just really just enough to hang in the air sort of thing, not enough to do a go-round.
Yeah.
But just sort of got it up and over the ridge because it's, again, at Mount Florida, quite steep. Bit of a hill behind it, just managed to get it out and get round it. And I had actually had the compressor stall maybe a couple months prior to that on takeoff, and so I thought it must have been the bleed valve popped, you know. And so bleed valve pops, you just can't make heaps of power, you know, you only reduce power.
Yes.
But none of the other instruments said that. It was only low torque, but the ITT was down, the NG was down, fuel flow was down, so it's just wasn't making power. It wasn't like it was dumping air and the engine was, you know, full noise. So circled around and just came and landed, you know, made sure I was on the money, landed. But what had happened was, I think it was a bolt or something in the power cauldron, power lever area below, had came loose and was just jammed. And just stopped me from going all the way
forward.
It physically stopped you.
And I sort of, because you know where you can feel it, you know, and it's like, it just pushed it forward and I'm flying, but it was when I was in that turn, I was like, man, this doesn't actually feel like it's all the way forward. Mm. And it's when I pulled back and pushed forward and it's like, damn it, I can't get the lever forward.
They took all those out, didn't they, after that?
Yeah, I think so.
Because they were hopeless anyway.
Yeah, so on the Cresco, they were really cool, but in the XL, they just a poor design. So what they were, you know, that's that add-on thing on the side with the spring load, and so it stops you from over-torquing.
Throttle stop,
so
yeah.
Oh, little vernier so you, thing.
Yeah, so you just set it.
Yeah.
You can set a stop on it, so it goes to a certain point, and you can't go past. You can push past it, but it's spring tension, so if you needed to.
That was a shocker.
So.
Just to refresh my memory, can you just go over the bleed valve thing again?
So when it failed on me.
Yeah. So what happens when the bleed valve fails? It hit.
Well, normally, like if a bleed valve pops, like if it's got a hole in it, the compressor's still compressing heaps of air. But it's not going through the turbine, is that right?
Yes, but it's at a certain amount of PSI, dumping. Isn't it? And that's how you know it's a bleed valve failure, because it'll...
Yeah, no, I can't... Don't quote me on the numbers, because I can't remember. Brucey's a man to know these ones.
Yeah.
But, because when you power up, start with the compressors compressing too much air for the engine, so it's letting it out, it's dumping it. And once it gets to a certain PSI, like maybe, I think in the XL, is it around about 38, 39 PSI? It then closes the valve. Yes. So, because it needs that air.
Yes, that's right.
To the turbine. Yeah. I'm probably absolutely butchering it. It's probably too simple of an explanation, but that's how I understand it.
Yes, no, that's right. And I think it was a bit lower, though, the PSI. I think it was in the 20s.
Yeah. So if your bleed valve pops, then... You still got power.
You can only get about 20 something. That's
20, 30 PSI.
Yeah.
And so for me, when my compressor stalled, it stalled on takeoff, and what it was the bleed valve stayed shut. And so it wasn't letting out that air pressure, and it's too much air pressure in the compressor stalling it. And man, did that shake. I thought the turbine blades had let go. I thought something had let go inside the engine, because I went to power up and the whole plane just... And so just instantly cut power. It looked like cut it back down to idle and it stopped.
What part of the takeoff were you?
Like right in the early part.
So you could stop? Airport.
It was off the airport. But again, if it was like Mount Florida, possibly not.
Yeah.
It was that engine, but, you just had a series of
it was
that
a
engine.
Pig of an engine. Yeah. Like from the get-go, it was just, the engine I had, it was XLA's engine, and it was mean. It was really good engine, and we took it out because it was out of time, and we put this new engine, but it was a reconditioned one, and that was a pig from the get-go. It ran hot.
Yeah.
Day one, when we put it in, you do all your engine tests, and the I think it was prop governor failed. Yeah. So when you go into beta in reverse, instead of pushing the air forward, it pushes the air back. So when your prop governor fails, when you pull on beta,
it's still
instead of pushing you backwards, it pushes you forward.
Yeah.
So it did
so
it on
you
day
shoot
one.
Yourself and keep trying to pull more reverse in,
and you because in the XS. Chris goes, you can get about 42 PSI in reverse.
Yeah.
So that's enough to take off. Yeah.
Backwards.
Crikey. Yeah, so, yeah.
Shocking engine, that one.
Yeah.
What happened to you, Hoodie, with your horry stab getting stuck?
Oh, same as you, mate. Exactly the same thing. Dumb. Just landed. Same thing, stirred the porridge as I took off. To be honest, I probably felt something when I flared for the landing. And I was like, fuck, that felt a little bit sticky. But when I came back round and stirred the porridge, just lazy, I think. I felt like a little tiny nick, and I kept doing it, but I don't know whether it was my mind or what told me that it was sweet, and then... that it had gone, took off, and as soon as I took off, it just amplified it a wee bit. So, just that little bit of back pressure, could feel it. So, same as you, just slowly dump the load. I didn't care about roads or anything like you did. It went all for everything.
I guess the question is, what did we learn from, like you say, laziness? But did you look back and go,
yeah, no.
Did you change the way you did stuff?
Yeah, I had the exact same thing happen again, got out, and sure enough, it was there. It was the exact same feeling, got out, and there's that little, there's a little tab on the, you know, that little lip just on the Hori stab at the very front of it. There's that little bit that would always just flick at it. Well, it just whacked the very tip of the Hori stab. So it just pushed that all out. So it was the actual metal. It wasn't the stone that was grazing up and down across the elevator. So it just got
Yeah. No.
So I just got a hammer and whacked that back in and we were away again. But, no, I mean.
Each knee came out. Fuck.
The engineer. So we called. Shot over to Hamilton, got the engineer and brought him back.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it is interesting what you do learn from it. Like, I reckon I get out a lot more, or if I am still lazy and I got a good loader driver, I'll call them up on the radio to have a look at something. But yeah, it's not often that it happens, though, to be fair. Like, you know, you fly the plane long enough, you get an idea, or you know straight away if there's an issue.
Yeah.
Keep doing the same thing a million times a day.
Mm. Yeah. But it's the thing, we watched all those fellas with, you know, around 20,000 hours, you know, and they'd be getting out and checking everything all the time. Like, I remember watching Bruce just felt something in the joystick one day, so he pulled the whole cockpit apart. You know, shut down and just followed the wire around and just to satisfy himself, and then put it all back together and just carried on flying because he knew that he had checked it all after that.
That's good.
But well worth.
Yeah, because you think about it, you know, like, I have to get out and have a look. It's going to take 10 minutes and all this. But the consequence could be in a box.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
And that's so right. Like 10 minutes to get out and have a look and to satisfy you is, and 99% of the time it's nothing.
Yeah.
But at least you know it's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it?
Just guessing.
But yeah, so important, eh? Just all those checks, the morning, the belly, like the article. What was it? Josh Corderay had that little tiny hole in his belly, and it just, we just kept on filling up with vert, and it built up right on the pulley thing until it popped off. So he lost his bloody elevator.
Oh shit!
Completely lost it because it built up enough to pop it off. Yeah.
Pop the cable off the pulley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did once have. So when I start in the morning. At least when I was in King Country, I'd pull the plane out, and before I'd start, I'd stir the porridge and
because you can hear
play with the so you can hear it
before you turn the power on.
Yeah, before I turn anything on,
and
I did it. It was in the middle of winter and hadn't flown, I think, for maybe 2 weeks, and I pulled the plane out and I was stirring the porridge and doing my thing. And as I did the elevator, there's a crunch, crunch. But, that's a bit strange. Crunch, crunch. Then did it 4 or 5 more times, and it just felt just a little bit of resistance as I was doing it. And then I thought, I better look at this one. And jumped out and had a look. And the whole elevator trim tab had turned to Weet-Bix, and it had fused itself stuck. And so normally what happens when you move the elevator forwards and backwards, the trim tab goes the opposite way, and it just stayed in that same spot, and it just the whole hinge just ripped itself off. It just
was it all that real rotten sort of corrosion.
Yeah, it corroded. The reason it corroded, funnily enough, was because I cleaned the plane too much.
You weren't using detergent, were you?
I was using was it Sonic? It's plain wash. The proper stuff.
Plain wash.
Yeah, it's good stuff, but it is corrosive.
Yeah.
And it so I use that, and I used it a lot. And I mean, just about every day I'd clean it, and then if I was having a big break, I'd give it clean the whole plane, give it a good scrub. But the hanger that it was in, it was an open hanger, and the back end was under the roof, but it was like by millimeters, right. So any rain or anything would just be pounding down on it. And the combination of me just having washed it, it was winter time. Sat there for 2 weeks, and there's still be some residual fur there, and it just cooked and fizzed over 2 weeks, yeah. And then crunch, game over.
Well, that's a successful failure because you caught it before you took off.
Yeah,
in a way.
Yeah, and I think that's something I don't know if I was doing it before then or not. Whether it was from when I had the little chip. Get stuck in there, I can't remember. It was definitely after that happened, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think there are all these little checks you start doing more and more as you get on, because you learn this thing happens, so I better check this every time that happens. So I'll check this too now.
But that's what's so good about having those, you know, windy day bullshit yarns with everyone, because you just, you know, especially with those older fellas, they come in and they just tell you one story. And so you just add that into your bloody, your little list, eh? Yeah. And your list just gets bigger and bigger. But, yeah, I got the exact same thing as you, but it's just stirring the porridge in the morning before you start. And it was fucking birds in the wing. You had to put a nest in the wing. But when you move the aileron, it was moving all the
straw
around. Yeah, the nest around, yeah.
Yeah,
so sure. They got in. It's just a little gap right on the outer bit there.
Yeah. So I had this one airstrip, which I knew really well, and there's nothing wrong with the airstrip. And this morning I went out to work. It was in the Fletcher, so I had the Fletcher this time. And it had a little bit of fog on it, and the fog was on the top end of the strip. It was only a gentle slope. But you could virtually see the touchdown area. Like if you're flying overhead, you could see the whole strip.
Yeah.
But on approach, you couldn't. And it was saying there's a bit of an angling approach to it because the hill's just across the road. And I buzzed it a couple of times. You know, if there's a little bit of ground fog, you can buzz the strip and it might separate. But you've got like 30 seconds to do something before it closes in, and that's far too short a time in a Fletcher. And I think I was working off the strip the day before, so I knew what I was looking at, and I remember circling and thinking I should just go home. But then I was like, oh well, I know where I need a touchdown, I can sort of see it, and let's do a couple of go around approaches and see how it feels and see how it looks and
break it out.
Yeah. And work it out, go a little bit further each time. And I do that and then realize, oh, there's a little sheep track on the left side of this touchdown zone. I just need that's my point. That's exactly how it was the last few days. I know I'm good. I'm not in the fog at that point, but coming into it, and did a few go around approaches and then thought, okay, well, let's have a go on this one, and came back around. I was on the money, speed and height and everything, and then came in, and once I was committed, like you couldn't go around because of the fog when you were that low. And I was at that point, I was about to touch down, and then I realised that I was looking at the wrong sheep track, and I was...
It sounds similar to another story.
Yeah, I was way too far left, and there was nothing I could do apart from just do what the best I could, and I had to go full right rudder and right brake, and and pretty much snaked it from there. Luckily, the Fletcher goes comparatively slow compared to a Cresco, an XL, and plonked it on and skidded sideways up to the strip and then got my bearings again and knew where I was, parked up and sort of sat there for a minute and then jumped out and walked down. And you could see exactly where I touched down and exactly where I went, and you could see the marks were even slightly wider, showing that I was skidding along. And I was about a foot and a half away from going over the side of the airstrip, just down into like a, not a big drop off or anything, just like a maybe a 1.5 meter dip, but enough where it would have ripped, the leg would have been gone and the wing would have been bent, and it would have just a completely stupid thing to do. There's no other.
Unfortunately, I've heard that story so many times from other pilots.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very similar one. Some have turned out okay and some turned out bad.
Yeah.
I guess we, well, George,
Are you talking about the other paddock?
The other paddock. So George came in, he was top dressing, like load after load after load. And I think whoever must have come in or something. It wasn't fog, it was
a shower, yeah.
Shower, and he landed, but it was just the wrong paddock.
didn't do any damage?
No.
Nothing.
They look real similar. They look like real similar right next to each other, the two paddocks, but fucking hell, George. But the XL, you know, you get a bit of water on that windshield at that. Shocking.
Can't see nothing.
Same in the Cresco. It's horrific. It's the light rain that's the worst. It just sticks there.
Yeah.
Better to have heavy rain.
Totally. So what was the, what did you guys do when you do something stupid like that? Like, I was pretty fortunate. I had a good mate of mine working there as well, Brandon, and we'd always yarn pretty much every night, and we'd have our own little talk about stupid things we did that day and have a debrief of sorts.
Well, I guess, like, for me, first one was always phoning the boss, Andy,
what a goody good.
I learned pretty fast. You tell him straight away or you're really feeling wrath later if you don't. But, because I was spaced down in Wairoa, so we'd always have, like, me and a couple of helicopter pilots would have those, you know, rainy day hangar talks. And always a bit of a talk in there. But, and also, like, you, Hoodie, and George, you know, it was, like, I think the three of us spoke more often when we talked to our wives. Like, every day we'd have a bit of a debrief.
On
the phone.
I don't know what you're doing telling the boss, but I'd always tell you guys everything.
Well, you know, there's no point hiding anything from Andy.
I know, but like incidents like flight landing in fog and stuff.
Flight landing in fog. I was talking more like when I've actually damaged the aircraft. Are you talking about those little near misses? Lucky walk away sort of thing.
The worst thing is that
Definitely the pilot hangar talk sort of stuff, isn't it? But that's where you learn so much.
Yeah.
It's sort of, I was falling out for the safety management role, and they're talking about how do you identify hazards, and I was like, the best way is just talking in the hangar to the guys, you know? It's beats anything else, beats any paperwork or forms.
And nothing's better than doing it and getting away with it.
I'd say what would be better is learning someone else's story and then getting...
But it's funny how many times you do it yourself and then you go, oh, that's what Pedro meant by don't do that.
Well, it's a bit like having kids, isn't it? Like, you know, how many times do you tell your kids not to swing on a seat? You're going to fall over and then they fall over and they start crying and I start laughing. I fucking told you.
There's a
little kid in all of us.
That's right. But, No, that Gisborne had some, the area that we were east coast of New Zealand, Gisborne there. Amazing, lots of awesome airstrips. Like Andy worked really hard over his time in that area and making sure the farmers got everything up to scratch and stuff. So we're pretty lucky with the airstrips that we had.
Extremely. That's the best area in New Zealand that I've worked that's got every airstrip I worked off had a bin.
Yeah.
And covered bin, and a bin that was designed to hold enough fert so you could, if the fert bin was full, you could work from daylight and know there's going to be enough time for a truck to get a load at whatever time the bulk store opens and drive out there. So the further inland you were, or the further away from the bulk store, the bigger the bin was. And that's it. Not even accounting for the bin being heaped, the fert being heaped up, which would fit a hell of a lot more. Makes a huge difference. That's the one of the biggest challenges with working down south here and having no bin. What are you saying, Pete?
Because your window of opportunity to fly is so short, you know.
Exactly.
Most of it.
What do we average? 3 hours a day, I think, is what we average.
Yeah, I think maybe 3.5 before it.
And
over a whole year. You know? So, like, obviously, some days you're doing 8-9 hours, and some days you're doing one.
Well, none.
But if you added up all the hours you did in a year and divide it by all the days you flew, on average, you do about three. I think it might be 3.8 hours a day.
I think we're a little bit not saying that they didn't do these hours anywhere else in New Zealand, because there's lots of people that are over 1,000, but we were quite lucky to have good weather to be able to do, you know, around.
We could fly 12 months of a year up here.
It's not your weather, though. It's the infrastructure. Like, I've been there and the weather's been crap, but you can still go out and work on an all-weather or a sealed airstrip with a big, massive bin and just chip away. Like, if it stops raining, you know, you can go to work straight away.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, like, I have the Waira Aerodrome, and I think I used to have 1,000 ton off there every year. So as soon as it rained, I knew the next day, once it stopped, I could do the aerodrome work.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. There's so much to... Yeah. What's that?
No, you're right.
Yeah, there's so much to think about otherwise. Like here, if you're going to have a good day, if you know it's going to be a good day and you want to do a job, all you can do is prepare the carriers. So you'll say, it's going to be a good day tomorrow. I want to work off this farm. Just like every farm in the South Island, it's 1,000,000 miles away from the bulk store.
Yeah.
But if you can, have your guys ready to go at 6:30, and if the bulk store opens at 7, I'll call you. Speak to the farmer. Yep, the weather's mint. Cool. We'll get on our way. Call the carriers. Yep, we're good to go. Sweet as. We'll be there in 4.5 hours. We're at the front of the line. Oh, cool. Thanks. So about lunchtime, when the wind picks up and it's real crap to fly. Not all of them are like that, though. But coming from the North Island to the South Island, I just shake my head at times.
I had one strip like that, and it could only hold 50 ton. And, like, admittedly, it was a ferret store close by, but a particular cocky wanted to save money, so he'd get his ferret from Napier, which, you know, it's 2.5 hours away. Mm. And he'd want to save money by doing it on the backloads of wool carted down.
Yeah.
So wool gum down, he'd put ferret on, come back up. That's how he's making it cheap. It backfired in the way that I had to go to that job 8 times to get the job done, you know, whereas if he'd gone it from Waira, it would have been done in a quarter of that time.
Yeah.
You know? Because, again, it was a short airstrip. It took off to the east, which in Gisborne's not ideal because, you know, your prevailing wind, like morning wind comes from west. And so, yeah, it was just, yeah. But his, I think his son took over and learnt, and so he actually extended the bin out, made it longer, so it had enough to keep me going till lunchtime, and got through it from Waira.
Ah.
So, yeah.
there you go.
That was good. Good outcome.
Yeah, when they, I think half the, if we're talking about improvements on airstrips, there's, I don't think there's even a battle as far as improvements. It's just educating the farmers. I had one fella not far from here where I was helping someone out doing some work. They've been doing it forever and a day, and the airstrips are real nice, good slope on it and good length, but unfortunately at the end of the airstrip there's willow trees and poplar trees that are, I don't know, 10 meters high or something. So all of a sudden you only got half that length to use.
Mm.
And it was a tricky airstrip. And I turned up there one day, I was a bit drizzly to work. So we parked up, the farmer turned up, had a cup of tea, and he's saying, how's it all gone? Everything all good? Yeah, nah, it's all good. Strip all good? Yeah, strip's all good, but shit, man, you'd be doing a hell of a lot better if those trees weren't there off the end. And he looked at me sideways and like, oh, what do you mean? I said, oh, well, we can't, we got to get over the trees, you know, it's, trying to explaining stuff to him that I thought I was making him feel like a dick for having to explain it, but he just didn't know. He's like, oh, well, I've got the chainsaws in the back there. Shall we go and chop them down? I was like, yeah, sweet as. So we spent the next hour cutting all these trees down, and now the airstrip's mint as.
It makes it feel so much different, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, hugely.
I had a couple, you know, new strip owners, and they said, oh, what can we do? I was like, cut the trees down on the side, and it just made it feel so much more roomier.
Yeah.
Rather than being quite a narrow corridor. Yeah. And then, yeah, again, cut ones at the end. Yeah. I did have one cocky, and he went and planted a whole heap of poplars on his farm. And I said to him, I hope you're not planning on keeping it one at the end of the airstrip, are you? He goes, oh, what's wrong? I said, oh, it's nothing wrong at the moment, but that tree's going to get pretty big one day. It's going to make us airstrip pretty short. Yeah, because it was a short enough one as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Have you ever worked off a two-angled airstrip?
Yeah.
Not like with a step on it?
Yeah.
Or like...
Like this, like this one that I'm thinking of, it's a short strip. It might be 230 or 250 meters long. Reasonably steep, but it's got a flat loading area and then a sort of a steep angle, maybe 30 degrees or something, and then probably halfway down it goes a lot steeper.
Oh,
and then right at the end it almost levels out. It's a real funny one because you, as far as taking off, you either need to be really heavy to ride it out the whole way,
yeah,
or really light so you're airborne and you don't smash into the that level bit at the end.
I had one like that one with the poplar getting planted in it, and if you're too light, you'd hit that that levels out a wee bit, and it almost can pop you up.
Yeah,
but you'd come back down again.
Yeah.
So you had to be heavy enough to stay on. But you had to be light enough to get your nose off.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'd whack the nose.
Yeah.
So you had to be flying the nose, but enough weight on the mains to keep you on the ground.
Yeah.
It was a tricky one.
Yeah, it was. And it was even trickier on this one because the prevailing wind was a headwind takeoff, but the tailwind landing, because it was so short, you couldn't land on the lower portion, the steeper part, because the angle change from the steeper part to the shallower part was too much, and you ended up getting airborne again. And if you touch down again, you're too far up, and you end up over in the road.
Yeah, so you have to land on that
on the upper part.
Change.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So it was only
which becomes quite short.
Yeah, really short. So I just said I can't work off it for the first, I think, couple of years that I was living there, and left it to the other fella because I wasn't too keen on getting unstuck there. But I did give it a go in the end, and it was, yeah, it's a bit of a challenge, those ones, to try, and you got to get your speed right, and you just have to, once you're committed, you have to just reel it in and hope yeah. for the best.
So, like, I had one airstrip, and it was quite short. Hiri Hiri Tau, these guys would have ripped off here. But I loved it, because it was dead flat, and you could touch down and still go round.
Is that what so, you were talking about before it got all the work done?
Oh, yeah, they put a bit of a slope on yeah. it now, which I think the slope on it's made it better.
Yeah.
But even then, you can still go round. Yeah. It's not a big enough slope that you can't.
It's just a tabletop, hey?
It's just a tabletop, yeah. And so, and it's relatively short, but you could just land, like, and if it wasn't going right, you just fat her up and away you go, sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was, you know, no stress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Short, though, but... you just, you know, you hit your numbers and touch down where you want to, and if you don't, fatter up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon that there's that airstrip in Gizzy. It's sealed now, concrete, and it's a real long one, but it's long and steep. It's got like a 300-ton bin in it.
Oh, Chris Mars.
No.
Tangy?
Chris Mars is Tangy Howe. Tangy Howe.
Yeah. Oh. That's the best airstrip I've worked off. It's just, even after the concrete, what you're airborne off the concrete, but even still, there's like a shitload of grass.
Another length.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think concrete only goes halfway down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No, they changed that. They've concreted all the way, yeah.
Have they?
Yeah, because you're getting halfway down and then you'd end up just wrecking the rest of the strip. So they did the rest of it.
Oh, okay. Oh, they might have had the whole thing done when I turned up. But you're airborne when you're still over the concrete.
Yeah.
Nah, yeah. Must have changed, because when I was there, it was about halfway.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. Yeah, you're right. You're joking.
Yeah.
But it's unreal, eh? And that farms mean.
Just keep falling off there, keep diving down and get all the speed you want and peel away.
And I think it's about a 400-ton bin.
Is it?
Yeah. It's huge, eh? Yeah.
We spent some months up there.
Yeah. What's the biggest bin size you've got there?
Probably that one. Okay. There's a couple of 400 tonners.
They're dropping from the top, eh? That's the way.
That's the best, because the trucks don't come down into the loading
area.
You can keep working. They don't cut up the turnaround area. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one in the King Country. I think that's 700 ton.
Jesus. Bin. Was it a land corp or something?
I don't think it is. No, she's privately owned, that one.
Unreal.
I think that one's John's. Yeah, it's like it's just a big hillside. They've scuffed a bit out, put a roof on it and some walls, and you tip off from the top. But it's, it'd be maybe 2 or 3 stories high sort of thing. So that's where you get all the thing. You could pretty much back a Cresco in there. Just park it there overnight, sort of thing.
Bloody hell.
Bit of a funny loader driver story with a bin like that. Young Thruster.
Oh, God.
So you know how, you know, you got the bins that they tip off from the top? He was relatively new, and he thought it was a bit... I hope he was new at the time, but he thought it was a good idea just to put the bucket underneath the truck as it's tipping off. Not a good idea. Because it just falls up and it's just super everywhere, and he just got covered in, wind everywhere.
It would have put the front wheels off the ground, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it did. I think it put, you know, so like the bucket stuck down and he had to dig it out.
Oh, golly. Yeah. He was the source of a lot of ha-has, really.
Yeah.
Oh, Thruster. How's he getting on?
Yeah, good. I think he's coming home for a few days.
Aussie.
His parents are, I think they're still cut off. They're down Portorino way.
Oh, shit.
And, so he's coming down.
From the big bloody storm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you guys go around often?
Yeah, I wouldn't say often, but I did used to go around.
Like, had no problem going around, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was always the first, like, you know, when you come to your airstrip and, like,
inspection,
you come to an airstrip
every
day, I'd fly up and down it, and part of it was always picking my go-around point, you know, and my where I'm going to go. So, like, right, this is where I'm going to feather up if I have to. Then I'm going to go left or go straight or go right, you know.
Do you have, do you have your training notes in front of you, Pete, just to look good?
No. funny enough, this conversation's come up a lot.
He's actually just reading his training notes.
I've had this conversation quite often in the last few years because a lot of pilots don't go around. It's a pride thing.
Oh, yeah.
And they crash, you know, or go through the fence.
I don't think it's a pride thing. I think it's what you're saying is...
or they don't plan for
indecision.
It.
That's right. So
I plan for it. Every landing, I have a plan to go that's around right. if I need
if
to.
If you've got that spot and that's in the back of your head, just like what you do automatically with an engine failure, if you practice it all the time and you're thinking about it, then it's not a big deal. But when you haven't thought about it, you just default to pulling the prop lever further and further back and hoping that you're going to make it.
And I think it's a bit like that, Lauren. Like, you know, we were talking before about getting out and checking the elevator. Like, when you're a bit younger, you do try to pull off the landings, and you like, because you don't know, sort of thing. You don't know better.
Yeah.
Although you've been taught better.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh, pull it, you know. But as time goes on, it's like, nah, not on my numbers.
Yeah.
Better up where I go.
Just nothing, eh? It's just nothing to go around. It just doesn't matter.
I had that...
apart from if you're landing at Kaikoura and there's a...
Or if you leave, you go around a bit late.
Yeah.
I had one similar to Jake last week, but probably not quite as scary. But Papua 2, you know, the free concrete strips? And again, it was, you know, everything's compounding. I think it's a few days before Christmas. It was my first year in ag, and we had five trucks all lined up the side of the hill waiting to tip off, and like it was not enough room, so I was sort of pushing my luck, and it was AJ Law, and he had all his guys, because he was awesome, you know, like you say, I'm going to be here, and he's like, sweet, we'll have
all the trucks sort of here,
and so he was seeing you watching me, and he's like, oh, might just back up, because where he was parked would have been like where I would turn through. And, like, I left the go-around just, like, because you come in there and, you know, like, the wind chain, like, it turns.
It swirls in there at the bottom spot.
It just does terrible stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm coming in and I'm looking good, and all of a sudden I'm not looking good. And at, like, first, you know, it's not looking good. I should have fed it up, but it's like, no. Oh, no, definitely no. You know, like, it's a big hill, but you're not going fast enough, and you have to pole forward to get that airspeed. And I had to just put in the rudder and the aileron and get around. And, like, luckily he'd backed away from where he was parked, because I would have gone wing through truck sort of thing.
Yeah.
But managed, he backed away and, got around and it was fine.
Yeah.
But, it was just one of those airstrips where it's like, oh, it's you got to have your go-around points so far back.
Yeah.
Like, quite early on. Yeah.
We had one in the King Country in Tokorima where there's no go around unless you're in a Cresco. In a Cresco, it didn't actually matter, but there are high tension wires behind the strip. So you had to go around as late as you wanted, and you just do a sharp climbing right hand turn and follow the train tracks back out. And I was working there this one day, working all day, just fanging, doing it in the zone, and mid afternoon, just coming in. And as you do, you sort of, you know, you're going quite fast, your VNO or whatever it is, 140 knots or something. I was going, just cruising downwind from the block and doing that constant turn on to short finals. And I was coming around and going the normal speed I normally go, and then bringing the power back. And then I realized, shit, I'm not in the Cresco, I'm in a Fletcher. And in the Fletcher, there's no go around on this airstrip because it can't outclimb those high tension wires. And there's another hillside across from the train tracks, and you can't outturn it. And I shat myself well and truly, slammed it on the ground. I don't know how fast I was going, but it was maybe 10, 15 knots or even 20 knots above normal touchdown speed.
So normal flying speed.
Yeah, normal flying speed. Normally we'd start almost bringing the beta in reverse in, which would be a comfortable landing in a Cresco, but way too hot in a Fletcher. And the whole way I was snaking it up, just trying to slow down as best I could and thinking, shit, do I go over the side or do I hit the truck or do I hit the bank? What's it going to be? And ended up, I don't know how, but I
should have just hit the truck and blamed him.
I snaked my way.
It reminds me of your story with the truck hoodie. Sorry, come back to that
we'll
one.
We'll get
eh?
To that one, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, snaked my way all the way up to the top and was sort of, I thought I was going to rip the tyres out sort of thing, trying to almost ground loop it at the top. That's what I was aiming to do. And somehow stopped. I was pretty much sideways when I stopped and only probably a couple of metres away from my loader driver, who was Ralphie. He is a real good bastard, but he just sat there looking at me and was like, oh, you didn't mean to do that, did you? Nah, mate, I'm just going to jump out for a minute. We'll just have some lunch, eh? And so the thing was, it was that mid-afternoon and you're getting tired and I was just in the groove, just chilling out.
Yeah.
And I was just reverting back to my normal and doing a normal Cresco approach when I just clean forgot.
Yeah,
it's funny that, because like we get taught so much to do the same thing over and over in routine, and that's what keeps you alive most of the time until you change something, like go from the Cresco to the Fletcher, and so you start to get tired and your body just goes back to that default
autopilot, yeah,
over and over and over. And so had you been in the Cresco, it would have been just a normal landing,
but a non-event,
because interesting.
Yeah, so hoodie.
Tell us your airstrip / truck story.
Which one?
The dump.
How many
one.
You got?
Yeah, how many have you got?
What's it?
Someone taking a photo? Truck driver taking a photo into the airstrip?
Oh, that yarn, yeah. So there was, we were up Matawai there, short strip. It was a, what would that be, Pedro?
I can't remember, but because you've got a bit of elevation too.
Yeah.
You know,
so anyway, but you can't see the very end of the strip. It's like you say, it's just, it goes and then just a little dip at the end. So you can't quite see the end of the
strip.
So
you can't see the bottom of the takeoff, you mean?
Yeah, can't see that. And the road wraps around it, around the bottom of the strip. And it's the bottom of the strip is basically the same height as the road. And, and I was just getting the load in, and the road sort of goes past the top of the airstrip, then goes down and wraps around it. And I saw a truck go past, and I thought, oh, you know, I probably could have beat him to the end of the strip, but I thought, oh, I'll be good, and I'll just I'll wait to the bloody, is that your computer? Wait for him to go past anyway. So I sat there for a second and watched his dust, because it was a gravel road, so I watched his dust trail go off around the end of the airstrip. But so I fatted it up, come over that brow, and just, fuck me, he's sitting there with the truck parked at the very end of the strip, and because, you know, the wind had just blown the dust trail to make it look like he'd carried on, but he's sitting there. And he's got his phone out, fucking video recording. So I started sewing as soon as I saw him hit the sew thing again. Got, you know, it's two-thirds of the way. I was like, we're just not going to get off here. So just pulled the dump. But, you know, you're going, traveling to covering so much ground that it still hadn't finished dumping by the time I got to him. So I was just so wild. And I spun around quickly, turned around in the air, and I was flying over, and I just remember looking down at him, and he was rowing his arm across the dash of his truck, like on the inside, and just fucking shoveling out fertilizer out of the truck. I landed and I turned the plane around and I was going down there to go give him a big rack up, but I just looked in the look that you could see straight into the truck. Hey, you could just, it's just all white. So I said, "Oh, that's enough." And he just carried on. But couldn't believe it. Just they just don't know, eh? So
yeah.
After that incident, we had to bloody have a
traffic.
Yeah, have a lollipop stick bloody person.
Yeah.
But fuck.
Be good to find that fella and get the video off him.
That'd be great footage. Real action shot.
Yeah.
If you're listening in and you're that driver, send us a message.
Yeah.
Shit, that would be funny. But yeah.
Crikey.
What was the other things that was a good practice? Did you guys ever, you know, you'd put your load in and then you'd have a bite to eat or something and then you'd get back in and you've taken on fuel or whatever, have a bite to eat and you jump in and then you've suddenly got a tailwind?
Yeah. See,
once.
Are you looking at me, aren't you?
No, I was just saying, like, I can't, I think I got pretty hated for doing that trick, hey, because I'd just open it up and dump it all on the ground and then take off.
Yeah.
Good on you, though. I mean, I would say it's probably best just to have your lunch with an empty
popper. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Because, like, it used to be okay when you had the manual doors because you just let a little bit out.
No, you could still get a little bit out with the other one.
Oh, no, but wait.
Oh. Yeah,
you know, you're going with this,
don't
you? Right. So, like, get the load, and I can't remember what got out, and for some reason I'd shut down. I can't remember what the reason was, but I think it was waiting for a truck or waiting for something had happened. We had to shut down, and so it's fine. Started her up, didn't think anything of it. And we've just gone to the new hydraulic system, but part of the hydraulic system was every time you power down and power up again, you had to calibrate the doors, which went from full closed, full dump, full close again. Yeah. And so, but the system wouldn't work unless you did that. And so I had a full hopper on, not even thinking, just going through the motion, and went full dump, and the whole plane just jumped. God, I dumped 2 ton. Yeah, the whole plane just, you know, instantly 2 ton of weights come off the undercarriage and the whole thing just jumped up. Didn't get airborne or anything, but, you know, it just popped up and I was like, fuck. It's a taxi forward.
Well, the loaded driver would have,
I was pretty good on a shovel. I'd get out and shovel. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. So after that, I'd never ever put a load into it. I knew I was going to take off, so if I stop for lunch, no load.
Yeah, that's the way. I did have a yarn with Bob Mons. He's done my check flights the last couple of years. He just hit 30,000 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, did he get it?
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
Bloody good effort, that fella. But yeah, the last check flight I did with him, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, and we were having a yarn, and I was telling him about some airstrip where I was new to the airstrip and I wasn't sure I was going to make it, and I think I get airborne, I mean, and I let it go too far. I knew it was an airstrip where I could get off regardless, but it would have been just a wallowy flight and not fun. And I explained to him, I did that and I touched back down as I got airborne on this steeper part of the strip that's not really part of the strip, and explaining to him that it was pretty dumb. I was sitting there ready to dump, and then he was saying, oh yeah, well the thing is, when you're a quarter of the way down the airstrip or whatever it is, you know then that you're probably not going to make it, and that's when he dumps. He's like, shit, I'm not going to wait until the end before I dump and then get over it. I know I'm not going to make it. I'm going to dump it way back here and have a nice, easy takeoff. And I thought, shit,
yeah,
that makes perfect sense. But no one's ever said it to me. I've never thought about it. And Duh.
Yeah. Well, I was always taught at the halfway 50, point 50. Should be 50 knots. And if you're not at 50 knots, this was in the Cresco, if you're not at 50 knots, you start sewing. Yeah. And then at the two-third point, so, two-thirds, isn't it? So a wee bit beyond that, if you can't pull, like, if the nose isn't flying, it's just dump.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so two-thirds of the way airstrip, if you're not, if the nose isn't, you know, if you don't have enough of elevator authority to just fly the nose, then it's dumping. There's no fucking around.
That's handy stuff to know when you're learning. See, I never got taught any of that. It was all in my head, like, you know, pick your point where you want to be at that speed. But when you're learning, how do you know where that point should be?
Yeah.
So you're sort of guessing, and I think I was sensible enough. I wasn't taking big loads to start with anyway, and coupled with the Cresco being a pretty powerful machine. So it wasn't all that bad, but I think it would have been easier had I known those sorts of tricks.
I think that's the hard thing with ag in New Zealand. There's no sort of manual, is there? Like, it's a syllabus that you got to get taught X, Y, and Z, but there's no, like when you're doing CPL, it's like all those different rules that you get taught, or if you do your IF rating, it's all the different calculations that you get taught, but you don't, it's in ag, it's individual to whoever's training you, isn't it? So if you're getting trained by someone, you get learnt their techniques, sort of thing.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in the future with all of that regard, because that's all, you know, there's going to be a lot of knowledge go out of the industry in the not too distant future. And there's a lot of people that aren't staying in the industry for life, you know, like those fellas here. So, it'll be an interesting time.
Yeah, it will.
That's sort of, as much as those fellas don't like to admit it, I think it needs to change a wee bit as regards to those hours, sort of hours that we were doing. And, people don't like to hear that, but that's just an opinion. Probably wrong.
Oh, I don't know about that one, Hori. Sounds pretty good. Which is a strange thing for me to say about you, but shit.
Not often he says stuff at your degree with me. Yeah.
Are you sick or something?
Yeah.
Old, are you guys keen to have a chat to old Mr. Blair Bobby Robson next week?
Australian friend.
Yeah.
Well, he's a South Islander, but
South Islander. Moved. Yeah, mate.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I'm off to Aussie tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
So I'll be in Aussie next week. That'll be a good
How
trial.
How far are you from Blair?
Where's he? I'm in Queensland. Where's he? I don't even know where Queensland is. It's in Australia.
Just hop on the plane, eh? That'll get you there.
Yeah.
Nice, sweet. Oh, we'll just have a chat.
Yeah. No, that'll be bloody good. Because he's
be good to see how he's getting on in Aussie, eh?
Yeah,
because he kicked it in the guts here in New Zealand and went to greener pastures, so see where he's going.
Yeah, bloody good. Let's do that. We'll lock that in. And we'll keep set. Oh, I sent you just quickly before we finish off, I sent you the info on how the podcast is going, eh?
It's hard to believe.
Someone else and they go, how many aviation podcasts is there in New Zealand? Oh, I don't know. Probably only one.
Apparently one.
So I'll quickly read it out for everyone. Position, I got an email from some random fella from podcast something. Your podcast, Pajama Pilots, has good performance in Apple rankings the last 30 days. Number one in aviation category Australia, number one category leisure New Zealand, and aviation New Zealand both number one, number two aviation Hong Kong, three aviation Poland, and a bunch of lower ones Hungary, Germany, blah blah blah. So I actually looked it up and it's legit.
No.
Yeah. And that's the highest ranking it has. I think it changes like every 6 hours or something. They make a new ranking. But I was looking at the charts and it's got like, you know, where we are in our ranking and how good or bad we are.
So how do we get leisure? Are we just talking leisurely?
I have no idea.
You know what I mean? Is it just like...
Pete, I don't. Can you explain it?
Yeah, random. Like, don't know, but yeah. Thanks everyone for listening. It must be listenable to at least some people.
Yeah. Or they, you know, listen for 10 minutes.
Well, they send it to their mates. Listen to these clowns.
Yeah.
Yeah. But make sure you do share, like it, and subscribe.
Bloody oath.
Yeah.
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 Shit hot. Yeah. All right, gentlemen.
Awesome.
All right, boys. We'll catch up with you next week. Take it easy over there, Birches.
Yeah, have fun.
I shall indeed. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, everyone. Have a good one.
Mate.
Hooroo. Hooroo. Bye.